From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Donald Trump on Monday announced that he would be sending more federal agents to Portland, Oregon, to ostensibly protect the courthouse in that city, whose fence was breached by protesters. The new contingent of paramilitary forces will be 100 deputy U.S. marshals, according to a report in the Washington Post. They will join hundreds of Department of Homeland Security officers that are currently in Portland. This past weekend saw thousands more residents of the northwestern liberal city show up in the streets to face off against federal agents in what is now turned into a war zone. Meanwhile, several other cities, including Seattle, Washington, Austin, Texas, Aurora, Colorado, and LA and Oakland in California, held protests in solidarity with Portland. Trump says he will deploy up to 75,000 forces to American cities if he has to. Arun Gupta is an investigative journalist who's written for The Washington Post, The Nation, Raw Story, The Guardian, The Intercept, and Jacobin. He's also a regular news correspondent for Rising Up with Sonali. He was out in the streets of Portland over the weekend. Welcome back, Arun.
Good to be with you, Sonali.
So I saw your get-up on social media where you posted an image of yourself in full gas mask regalia. And judging by what unfolded on Saturday and Sunday in Portland, that was probably very warranted, might have protected you. Tell me, give me a sense of what played out. And for our TV audience, we're going to play some of the videos that you captured while you were on the streets of Portland.
So it's not a war, right? You know, we need to be clear about that. I talked to a war correspondent who's out there, someone who's covered conflict all over the world. And I said, how's this compared to a real war zone? And he said, well, real war zone, there's more guns and dead bodies. But it really does feel like a war zone in many ways. So when I was out on Saturday night, the number of people was absolutely massive. And folks have to understand that this feels like a huge swath of the city is in total rebellion. I have heard nothing but support for what is going on out there. The other thing to remember is this is overwhelmingly peaceful and nonviolent. Do some people throw fireworks? Yeah, there are a bunch of fireworks going off, but they are relatively harmless compared to what the police are doing. They are brutalizing people. They are tear gassing people. They are beating them. They are shooting munitions directly at their heads. Lots of people have been hit in the face and head. It looks like they are trying to kill someone. And people are responding with a defensive measure to be able to go out there and get anywhere near the courthouse. You have to have all sorts of protective gear. And while I had this like full gas mask with a face shield, it's still not enough. You need a ballistic helmet. You need a ballistic vest. I went to the front lines, and it's kind of like organized chaos. So they've erected this thick steel fencing that's reinforced around the building. And people are trying to tear it down because it's very simple. You hear the same chant 1,000 times each night, feds go home. It's kind of like, the Arab Spring with Mubarak. You know, the people want the fall of the regime, or what they chanted in Tahrir Square. And it's similar here. They want the feds out of here, this type of state police force, this authoritarianism, this manifestation of Trump's fascism. And so you'll see people in the crowd who are calling out commands, you know, like they have spotters. The building, I think, is like 12 or 13 stories, something like that. It's this Death Star style architecture with what looks to be a giant turret on top. Marshals and the border police, the military force. There's a good article in The Guardian about them, BORTAC. You know, there are all these descriptions of them as SWAT. They model themselves actually more on special operations. They think of themselves as the Navy SEALs of domestic policing, and they see whoever they're facing as an enemy combatant, and that's what it certainly feels like out there. So among the protesters, you'll hear people calling out commands like, we need more lasers. And you'll see these laser pointers dancing across the face of the building, trying to force the spotters away. And people will be going at the fence with like bolt cutters and apparently there was a blowtorch. I didn't see that. They were hooking up ropes and chains, trying to pull it down. And as people are working to take down the fence, other people will be shielding their bodies with these homemade plastic and wood shields, and then umbrellas will be put over the top to hide them from the cameras. In the meantime, people are throwing fireworks, and you see under the concrete awning these huddled figures in a dark cloud. It's just these black figures in the smoke and gas, and they're throwing all sorts of tear gas at people. They're throwing munitions at people. They're people with lacrosse sticks and hockey sticks, or just with these thick, heavy-duty gloves, are picking them up and throwing them back. There's the Dadtifa, all these people with leaf blowers who are blowing back the smoke. At one point, I waded right into the middle of the battle, and I realized, like, oh my goodness, I'm right between the protesters and the cops, and I retreated a little bit. But you just see all these people like crouched down behind shields, and they had taken a part of the fence down, and the cops are just throwing all these munitions, and they had some sort of cannon where they're firing munitions directly at people's head, and so I retreated back about like 75 feet to near a tree to offer some shelter. And as I'm standing there crouching, and there's a woman who's kneeling beside me, retching with the tears and snot running down her face. No one's even paying her attention. You see the press people, with their full gas masks and ballistic helmets and vests. And I'm crouching beside a tree, and a pepper ball hits the tree, and it sends these shards, and it just stings my hands with the pepper spray. And as I'm crouching there trying to record what happens, I get hit in the back on my shoulder with some sort of munition. And meanwhile, I see these, some sort of, I don't even know what they were. You just see this object propelled at high velocity, trailing sparks. But the arc is, it just goes right at head level. And a friend of mine who's a filmmaker, he was filming what was going on. And this munition, you just see in a couple frames, it comes straight at him and it hits his camera. And if it didn't hit his camera, it was going to hit him right in the eye, which would have blinded him, if not killed him. So, it's people are incredibly courageous, and they're trying to resist and create the social and political unrest such that the feds are forced to leave, and it is a real battle out there. And there are also people coming from all over, and now we see this battle spreading to other cities.
So you mentioned the Dad Tifa. So this started out, I understand, with the Wall of Moms, or Mom Tifa, some called themselves moms last week, who showed up to put themselves between protesters and the courthouse, and where the federal officers are. And then we had men calling themselves dads with leaf blowers to blow the tear gas back. I understand that veterans also joined over the weekend. So there's some sort of organized kind of sense of groupings that are showing pretty brave resistance.
Oh yeah, let's, the broader context, of course, is Black Lives Matter,
Right.
and in terms of this is Portland has this notoriously brutal and racist police force. They really target Black, brown, indigenous people in terms of killings, in terms of brutality, in terms of stops and arrests. And Portland has a nickname of the whitest big city in America. And there's even a high-ranking officer in the Portland Police Department who's essentially a neo-Nazi. He was caught as a police officer creating a Nazi war memorial in the park, and not only did they not fire him, they promoted him. So this is really a white nationalist force. And the ACLU of Oregon, despite its liberal pedigree, said they don't know of any police force that uses crowd control munitions more than the Portland police. So this is the broader context. And it was the Fed, the shooting of the young man Donovan LaBella in the head, who was peacefully protesting, nearly killing him, and then the snatch squads that caused it to explode. And it had been down to just a few hundred people, if that, coming out every night. And then we saw, the mom block, mom Tifa, whatever you want to call mom squad, coming out there trying to protect people. And a number of them have been also shot in the face. Then we see the wall of vets. There's teachers against tyranny. You see these blocks of, people are organizing, these blocks of lawyers, of doctors. There was a chef block. This is really a popular uprising, and it is remarkable to actually see average, middle class, upper middle class professional people who are supporting this resistance and rebellion. But the important thing to remember is, again, as ACLU of Oregon says, as all these journalists say, this has been overwhelmingly peaceful. And when the police don't attack, it has the feeling of this joyful festival. There's these food tents in the park, there's DJs, people are dancing, they're chanting, they wave their cell phone lights. It has this joyous atmosphere, and that the police are trying to crush.
And so Trump has, of course, as per usual, chosen to rewrite reality and claimed that these are all Antifa. He has called the Wall of Moms a scam. It was an interesting report, a new database that was just published on July 27th in the Guardian newspaper that shows that Antifa has been responsible, or anti-fascists, people identifying as anti-fascists, have been responsible for exactly zero deaths since 1994. Meanwhile, the number of victims killed in right-wing violence since 1994 numbers as 329. So this is obviously, just a scaremongering tactic. And the Department of Homeland Security's database that was created to justify the arrests in Portland list all of these incidents that they describe as coming from violent anarchists, which is just so bizarre to see this in a government record. They're using the term violent anarchist as if it's some sort of official term, making no attempt to distinguish who is, how they even decide who a violent anarchist is. And acting DHS security secretary Chad Wolf, has used this terminology. The main thing that they're accusing protesters of is graffiti and some use of lasers. They're claiming that that protesters are trying to blind officers using lasers and throw fireworks at them. And now, of course, we've heard that they pushed down the steel fence. But Arun, in thinking about all of these claims that the federal officers are being attacked, it reminds me of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. If US troops weren't there in the first place, they wouldn't get attacked. If the federal officers weren't in Portland, they wouldn't get attacked. A simple solution to them being supposedly attacked is to leave si the city, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think a good def one of the there are many definitions of fascism. I think one good definition that applies in this point is that fascism is colonialism come home, where you see the same weapons and tools of imperialism applied to people at home. And that is exactly what is going on here. There wouldn't be all these people out there. And I think it's very important to remember, because I'm hearing from a lot of liberals, it's just like, oh, this is just giving Trump what he wants, and we have to look at fascism like a disease, right? And I'm normally I don't like to do that in terms of social movements because of the problematic history. But when you're dealing with right-wing extremism, this is really what it's like. So if you have a disease and you don't treated, it goes left unchecked and it spreads. And this is what happened. The federal agents start showing up. The first report of them shooting people is July 1st. It's not until July 12th that Donovan LaBella is shot in the head. All he was doing was he was standing across the street holding a boombox. The feds throw a munition at him. He picks it up and he tosses it a few feet, goes back to holding the boombox, and they shoot him right in the head. And it was just horrifying. And then a few days later, we get the videos and the reports of people being snatched up and disappeared, like something out of Chile under Pinochet in 1973. You know, where these men in military outfits come out of these unmarked cars, grab people and hustle them off into these vans and drive off. So they would keep doing stuff like this if people didn't stop, if people were not protesting. This was part of the Washington Post report from last week, that what the Trump administration is looking for is viral content. So they're going to keep provoking and provoking. And if this is allowed to go unchecked, then what happens, you know, tomorrow and the next day? Suppose, you know, like abortion, reproductive rights clinics start to be attacked, and the police just stand there and watch and don't do anything about it. You know, other people who start to, you know, protest for their rights get attacked, and people don't do anything. The cops don't do anything about it. You know, voting places, you know, people get attacked. This will just spread and spread. And what we've seen this happen in Portland with the white nationalist fascistic violence that has gone on for the last 3 years. Remember, Portland is a testing ground for this type of violence, with groups like Patriot Prayer, the Proud Boys, Identity Europa, the neo-Confederates who all come here and riot. They have used Portland as this testing ground, and that's exactly what Trump is trying to do with his secret police here now. And so if you don't do anything, it's just going to completely spread until you have a society that looks like that, for all intents and purposes, is a fascistic dictatorship.
And now Trump wants to send deputy U.S. marshals to Portland. He is, you know, claiming that he will send up to 75,000 federal officials, federal agents, you know, I suppose from various federal agencies to, quote, help cities with violent crime. In the case of Portland, specifically Black Lives Matter, which I suppose in the eyes of his base are one and the same. What about the power of cities to stand up to this? And I'm not talking about residents, I'm talking about the official apparatus. What is the Portland City Council doing? What is the government of Oregon and the state government of Oregon doing? I understand that Portland police officers joined federal officers over the weekend to help arrest people because they claimed that things were getting out of hand. But I thought that the city council had passed a resolution preventing Portland officers, police officers from cooperating with these federal agents.
Well, they did, and the cops don't care. I mean, this is typical of America. The cops think they're above the law. They think they are the law, and they were completely cooperating. That's what I saw on the streets as well. I mean, the feds attack and start going into the city. The Portland police have been limited in their use. And the thing about the limits is that have been placed on them, all the judge said is, like, you know, he's going to enforce what their policy is, what the police policy is, in terms of, because they were using such the crowd control munitions with such indiscriminate force. The restraining order on the police comes after they were beating, gassing, brutalizing journalists and legal observers and the public generally. And so the cops are supposed not supposed to be helping, but that's exactly what they're doing. When you see the feds march a block or two in the city, and then suddenly, you know, scores of Portland police in vehicles show up, this is coordination by any other name. And now what they do is, and I watch them do it myself, they do these bull rushes where they'll just charge a crowd and start beating and arresting anyone who they can catch. And a good friend of mine had his arm broken and his face smashed because he can't run that fast. And they beat him brutally. And so this is what is going on to peaceful protesters every night, we have to remember.
What about the violence also, and I'm talking about violence from federal officers and police spreading to other cities? We know that over the same weekend, there was one person killed in Austin, Texas, in Black Lives Matter protests. And he was apparently approaching an armed person who used his car as a vehicle. In Aurora, Colorado, there was a documented case of a car trying to drive into protests. One person was shot, but luckily survived. And in Seattle, not far from you, and where you just reported from for our program and for other outlets a few weeks ago, there were mass protests and mass arrests, like 47 people arrested over the weekend. So it seems as though there are solidarity protests in other cities, but there's also this bizarre sort of sharing of vigilante tactics, like the car thing, we know, which in European cities is an ISIS tactic.
Yeah, no, and well, you know, this tactic was imported here with the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville in 2017, where
Right,
Heather
where,
Heyer was
yeah.
killed by a neo-Nazi. So we've seen over 70 of these attacks, and you know, people can really learn from what's going on in Portland. The protests are now protected. The cops are not going to protect the protests. And so when you see this, you know, all of this is happening in a few blocks in downtown. The right wing is making it sound like, oh, the city is in complete chaos. And if it does extend beyond downtown, it's because the cops are attacking through the city. But around every single intersection around it are blocked off by cars, pickup trucks, motorcycles, bicyclists. So they completely protect the protests from any vehicles that might try to ram them. You know, I wouldn't doubt it if there are people with guns out there. I'm not a fan of guns, but this is the reality that we live in today. And so, you know, if the cops aren't going to protect you, you need to protect yourself. And this is what it's starting to come to. And so I think other cities would learn. Seattle has learned from that because of the person who was killed there on the freeway a couple of weeks ago. They now use cars and other vehicles to protect the protests from car attackers.
So Arun, I remember just, 4 years ago when you and I talked about this election as being the point in time when America could very easily slide into fascism. A lot of people dismissed that sort of talk as hyperbolic. But I think even you and I might be surprised by where we are today, or maybe not. Are you shocked that this is just a few months before the 2020 election? This is the approach that Trump is taking.
No, I mean, like, I really find 99% of mainstream understanding of Trumpism. There's a lot of terrific reporting out there in the mainstream, but kind of the analytical, historical understanding is just completely awful. In March of 2017, I wrote an article that said Trump's strategy is to bring the war on terror home. We talked about this in 2016, that Trump was going to engage in ethnic cleansing. And it was the same thing with Hitler. You know, Goodwin's Law is out the window now when you have a president who calls neo-Nazis very fine people. You know, it's he said he was going to engage in ethnic cleansing. He wanted to completely ban Muslim immigration, which he's done from all these countries. He's completely cut off refugees coming into the U.S. illegally, of course. He said he wants to deport millions of undocumented Americans. You know, this is a fascistic government. Now, snatching people off the street isn't necessarily entirely. Fascism, right? Stalin did that plenty. But in terms of this kind of like cross-class ethno-nationalist blood and soil movement that glorifies violence and extreme reactionary identity and gender roles, this is exactly what we are seeing with Trump, that is married to this type of extrajudicial violence and repression. And I think one of the ironies that we're seeing coming out of this moment is that, like, 2 years ago, folks were calling for abolishing ICE. Now, I think if Biden can get into office, you're going to see this movement to abolish the DHS.
Right. Well, that is going to come full circle with what this government started after the September 11th attacks. Arun, thank you as always for joining us. Please stay safe out there.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest has been Arun Gupta. He's an investigative journalist who's written for The Washington Post, The Nation, Raw Story, The Guardian, The Intercept, and Jacobin. He's also a regular news correspondent for Rising Up with Sonali, and we've been discussing the ongoing federal officers' deployment to Portland, Oregon. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.